Dudes and Dudettes, episode 146 of The Anxious Truth. Welcome back. Today we are going to do part two in my little three-part series where I talk about my own personal experience with antidepressants. In my case, that was Paxil. The antidepressant was called Paxil. And I took that between 1996 and 2005. And I'm going to walk you through what my experience was. In the first episode, which was podcast episode 145, so you can go to theanxioustruth.com/145 to listen to that, I gave you a quick overview of my stance on medication, so you can get that there. I'm not going to go over that again. Why I decided to start taking an antidepressant and what my initial experiences were. So to get this one going, I'll just remind you, I was in a really bad place. I got some advice from my general practitioner, my family doctor at the time. In retrospect, that advice was certainly questionable, but I hold no ill will against him, and I acquiesced. I didn't want to take medication, but I said, okay, I'll do it. And initially, my experience was that I thought it was an absolute 100% lifesaver. It changed everything. It stopped my panic attacks. It lifted my deep clinical depression. I would have told you that it was the greatest invention ever in the history of mankind. That's true. I will freely admit that. But then I want to talk in this episode about when reality about the medication started to creep in. And again, let me remind you, this is my personal experience. So what I'm going on here is what happened to me. And additionally, I'm going on what I have seen happen to many, many, many other people. This does not mean it will be your experience, nor does it mean that it is your experience. Your experience could be very different. And if you are choosing to continue to take medications, I respect that. That's totally fine. People have asked me to talk about my experience and why I feel the way I feel, and that's what I'm going to do here. So this is my experience. Yours may be different. So after probably 5 or 6 months, I started to notice while I was taking Paxil, and I don't know what Paxil is called in your country, P-A-X-I-L, you'll have to, it's an SSRI, right? Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And let me remind you also that I have no experience with benzodiazepines. I didn't take those, so I can't really speak to that. So about 5 or 6 months into my experience with Paxil, things started to pop up that were really kind of the beginnings of some red flags, right? The first thing was that I noticed that I was gaining weight. Like, I was gaining weight pretty quickly. Now, one of the things that I was told when my doctor gave me a prescription for Paxil, he told me, well, this is the mildest antidepressant. Now, in 1996, he thought that. That's fine. Maybe that's what he was being told by GlaxoSmithKline, who SmithKline Beecham, whoever the company was at that time. This is the mildest of all the antidepressants. And he said, it's going to be fine. There are really no side effects. And he actually said, you may actually find that you lose weight when you take Paxil, because he gave me this crazy explanation about how it impacted serotonin. And serotonin is part of the signaling system that tells you when you're full and when you're hungry and you'll eat less, whatever. I wasn't interested in that, to be honest with you. I just wanted relief. So I started taking Paxil, and as it turns out, the opposite was happening. I was gaining weight. And I remember, I've always been, you know, a gym dude. I've always worked out consistently. I've always tried to keep myself in pretty good shape. And I was hovering in the low 200 pounds or so, which is pretty normal for me. It's my average weight, or was back then anyway. And I started to notice that all of a sudden my clothes weren't fitting right. Like, my jeans were getting tight. It was weird, and it was starting to creep up on me. And then I noticed one morning, like, well, this isn't right. I'm gaining weight. But here's the interesting thing. Normally, I would have done something about that. Normally, throughout my entire life, before Paxil and then after Paxil, I would have noticed that and said, oh, I have to do something about this. Look, we all put on a few pounds here and there. That happens, right? It's okay. We're not machines. And then you take some steps to take the weight back off. You do what you got to do. And that's always been me. Except in this case, I noticed, well, this isn't right. Like, my jeans aren't fitting right. But I didn't do anything about it. And so there were two red flags in that, too. One, weight gain, when I was told that, well, this will probably make you lose weight. So you got to be careful about that. And the second was that I didn't make any adjustments at all. I didn't do anything to address the weight gain. And it just kept going and going and going. And so there were two problems that I had among several, but there were the first two problems that I will tell you about that I had when I was taking an SSRI, Paxil, for instance, was the weight gain, and really the reason behind that, which I cannot necessarily explain physiologically, although this is a very widely reported side effect. At this point, it's not even a question. weight gain on an antidepressant, on an SSRI, is actually a very common side effect. So it was the opposite of what my doctor said would happen. Oh, this helps you feel full so you won't eat as much. And that turned out to be absolutely patently untrue. And again, I don't fault him. He was telling me what I think he was being told at the time, and that's fine. So there was weight gain, but more than that, which I think from a physiological standpoint, I can't necessarily explain. I don't know the mechanism behind why I was packing on weight so quickly, and it started to accelerate. The longer I was on the medication, the faster I was gaining weight. But more so, it absolutely changed my judgment. It absolutely changed the way I made my decisions. There is no doubt in anybody's mind, either the people in my life, myself, I started making inexplicably poor decisions. And the first indicator of inexplicably poor decisions was about my weight and what I was eating. Now, look, you know, I'm a big fan of pizza. I'm not a big sweets guy. I've never have been, but I mean, give me a bag of Doritos and I'm in, you know. So I've always been that guy. Those are my propensity in terms of junk food would go toward the salty stuff. And I found that I was just eating so much more. Like my inhibition was gone. Anything that I wanted to eat, I ate. So I did start eating like way more of all the things that normally I would have said, I'll have pizza like on a Friday night, but you can't eat a lot of pizza because it's high in calories and blah, blah, blah. Like I knew what I was supposed to eat. I just didn't care. I was eating anything I wanted anyway and as much as I wanted whenever I wanted. And in fact, I started even eating like a lot of sweets, ice cream and cookies and stuff that I never looked for suddenly became staples in my diet. So I went from a guy that was like always in the gym and tried to stay in decent shape to a guy who stopped going to the gym, started gaining weight, started eating anything I wanted, as much as I wanted, whenever I wanted, and naturally started gaining a whole lot of weight. That wasn't good. So the problem here was weight gain. And in the end, I literally weighed more than 100 pounds. 9 years later, I was 100 pounds heavier than I was when I started the medication. 100 pounds. That is no joke. 100 pounds. I was actually about 110, 115 pounds heavier on my last day of Paxil than I was on my first day. And that is a function of some sort of crazy physiology that I do not understand. I don't claim to understand. And the way that that medication literally changed my judgment, it changed the way I made decisions. I was making terrible decisions. And the first form of terrible decision was health related and food related. It became just zero inhibitions. Yeah, we eat whatever you want, whenever you want. Doesn't matter. It was not good. I mean, it was the way I describe it is, I know that I'm not supposed to eat, you know, 4 slices of pizza. I know, now, if you live in New York, you know that a slice of pizza is a big slice of pizza. We don't have little tiny pizzas here. Like it's just, I don't know, we make big pizzas here in New York. That's just the way it is. I know that I'm not supposed to eat 4 slices, but I would eat 3.5 for dinner. And then 2 hours later, have another one, you know, for snack. And then the next morning I'd have another one for breakfast. Cause I will admit cold pizza for breakfast. You can ew me if you want, but it's a thing that I've always liked in my whole life. So I knew that I wasn't supposed to do that, but I did it anyway. And there were consequences to that. I was gaining weight. I was getting very unhealthy. I stopped working out. I didn't care. I just didn't care. And when you put on 100 pounds, I got to the point where it was difficult to walk up my driveway. Like I would walk up the driveway, which was relatively steep, and be out of breath. You know, I was hot. I was sweating all the time. This is the way it is when you're heavy, when you put on a lot of weight. And I didn't care. The people in my life that did care about me tried to point it out. They were concerned about me. My doctor, and I changed doctors several times. I'll talk about that a little bit. But every doctor that I did have over those 9 years would point it out also. This is, you know, you're putting on some weight here. You should take off this weight. You should take off this weight. You should take off this weight. But I didn't. I just kept eating and didn't exercise and didn't care and knew that there was a problem and hated feeling that way, but just kept going anyway. And that was not me. That is not the way I acted before the medication. Now, granted, through all of this, I was having no panic attacks, very little anxiety, if any, and I certainly wasn't depressed. But here's the problem. Here's the second major problem. I was nothing. I was not happy. I was not sad. I was not angry. I was not upset. I was not anything. I kind of felt nothing. So it took away my sense of good judgment, which will manifest in other places too, I'll tell you about. But I also had almost no emotions, none, zero. During the time that I was on that medication, I pretty much just disconnected from everything. I was an island. I disconnected from my friends. I disconnected from my family. I disconnected from anything that was important to me. I was just kind of going through the motions. I was fine. I wasn't panicking. I didn't have any panic attacks. I didn't have any anxiety. I wasn't depressed. I was just nothing. It was just flat all the time. I lost two grandparents while I was on that medication. Didn't shed a tear. And I'm telling you, I was close to my grandparents. Like I you know, spent a lot of time with them growing up, and my grandma and grandpa passed away while I was on that medication and could not cry. I knew I was supposed to. Like, I knew that I should be feeling something for the loss of my grandparents, and I couldn't. I couldn't feel anything. There were times when I knew I was supposed to feel happy. I knew that it would be normal to be upset. I knew that it would be normal to be, you know, joyful. Both of my daughters were born while I was on that medication, and I knew that I should feel something about that, but I didn't. I knew that I should, but I could not. I could not conjure up emotions. I just had none. It was a strange situation. Now, when clinically depressed, that flushing of emotions, the inability to feel joy, anhedonia, it's actually called, has a name, is crushing. It's soul crushing. But on the medication, I basically had the same condition, but didn't care, which was really very insidious. So I, again, in that situation, on an emotional level, and on a connection level, a human level, I know something is wrong, but I don't care. I'm going to keep going. I'm just going to keep going. So you know something is wrong, but my ability to make good judgments was seriously compromised. So I didn't do anything about it. I did nothing about it. I just kept going and let it be the way it was. And that became very damaging into relationships in my life. And I will tell you that the bad decision making, I couldn't make good decisions about my physical health. I was making terrible decisions about my emotional and mental health. You know, couldn't change course, didn't care, just couldn't be bothered. More than happy to just hide off on my own with a laptop and do my work, or what I thought was work at the time. It was bad. And then I was making terrible decisions financially and business. Like, I've always worked for myself, and I pretty much burned that business right to the ground with just ridiculous, inexplicable, terrible financial decisions, and decisions based on just, meh, couldn't be bothered, don't care. I know this isn't going to work. I'll do it anyway. I know I should do this, but I'll do that anyway. I'll take the easy way. Like, it was completely and utterly insane. When I look back on that time and I think, it's, you know, and it's funny because people that I knew before then, that I know after then, would look back. One of my ex-business partner, we had a conversation after I was off the medication several years, and he looked at me square in the face. He said, you know, you're one of the smartest people I know. We couldn't understand what you were doing. And he was dead on right. He was 100% correct. So that business split up, and I you know, then I was on my own. This sort of the second half of the time I was on Paxil, and I just burned it right to the ground, burned it literally, willingly, knowingly, but knowing that I shouldn't, but I did it anyway. And look, I'm a big fan of personal responsibility. In the end, those decisions are mine. They were mine to own. I did that. I'm not blaming GlaxoSmithKline for that, but I'm telling you that I did not make those decisions before the medication, and I didn't make them after. I made much better decisions before and after. So you do the math. And my experience with that is not uncommon. It's not, I'm sorry, but it's not uncommon. So it took away, I was gaining weight, making terrible decisions about my own personal physical health. I was disconnected from everything, had no emotions, knew that was wrong, but didn't do anything about it. And I was making terrible financial and business and practical life decisions. I was making bad moral and ethical decisions. I will own that. I made some terrible moral and ethical decisions while I was on that medication, and I knew that they were the wrong decision, but I made them anyway. I made them anyway. I spent money that I didn't have. I didn't had at the time. I didn't pay bills that should have been paid. It was ridiculous. I know that you don't do that. That's not how you live your life, but I lived my life that way anyway. So by the time I hit, you know, 2003, 2004, both of my daughters were born at that point. So I've got a little family, and I had no connection to them. I was completely disengaged from them. Didn't hang out with them, didn't interact with them, didn't eat with them, nothing. I was just on my own. I lived here. You know, I lived in the house with them, but, you know, I was kind of an absentee dad, even though I was there, strange as that may be. And believe me, this is incredibly, I'm going to say embarrassing, I guess embarrassing. It's not a thing I'm proud of at all in any way, but that's the way I lived. And I knew that wasn't right. I knew it wasn't right, but again, I did nothing about it. I just kept taking the medication, and everything was, I just kept rolling forward into just the abyss of like financial ruin, relationship ruin, family ruin, friends ruin, physical health ruin. I was starting to look pre-diabetic. My cholesterol was through the roof. My blood pressure was through the roof. My doctor was literally screaming at me when I would go to see him. It was not good. And by the way, in terms of doctors, even including the doctor that was with me when I decided to stop taking the medication and helped me through that, and he's still my doctor to this day, and I'm eternally grateful for him. Even he, as I switched doctors over those 9 years, because it happens, you know, doctors leave and practices change, and I moved to a different place, they would just phone in refills. Just phone in refills. And I, once in a while, I would ask, like, do I have to take this forever? Yeah, it's, you know, just keep taking it. The attitude was so incredibly casual. Now, did I take the time to literally speak to any of those doctors about what I was going through? No, I didn't, because I didn't care. Like, I just kept going. I would say that if I had had that conversation with any of them, maybe they would have listened and said, ooh, maybe we got to think about this. But I didn't have the conversation, so I can't fault them. It was very casual. I would phone it in. Hey, I'm due for a refill. Boom. They would just send it into the pharmacy and go pick it up. So it was super easy, super easy. But I wasn't having panic attacks. I had no anxiety. I had no agoraphobia. I had no depression. Winning, except really losing hard. So it got to the point where I was so disconnected with my family. I'm going to wrap this up. So those were my experiences. I'm not going to go rant. I will tell you a few little things here and there. If I would forget to take it, which happens when you feel okay, you forget to take your medication. If I would forget to take it, what would happen to me is after about 2 days, and I wasn't going up and down in dose. I wasn't necessarily that guy, right? It was pretty stable for me most of the time. I could change doses maybe 2 or 3 times in all of 9 years. And nothing big. So it was pretty stable for me. So in that respect, I'd probably say pharmacologically, like Paxil was perfect for me, worked great, you know, strictly from a chemical standpoint. But it got to the point where if I would forget to take it, the only thing that would happen to me is after a day or two, I'd know that I forgot to take it because I would start to get a little bit of that dizzy, sort of disoriented feeling. I would start to feel a little depersonalized and derealized. And it would be, oh, I forgot my medication. And I would take it, and a couple hours later, I'd feel okay. So that's the only real issue that I had. Oh, there were sexual side effects. I should mention that. I mean, sexual side effects to no end. So it is it will depress your libido, which it certainly did. And then when you do engage in sexual activity, it was like, I guess I could maybe watch the entire Godfather trilogy before I finish. Like, I'm sorry for being blunt here, but that's another incredibly well-documented side effect of these medications. And I experienced that for sure. Absolutely. So definitely what you need in a relationship at the time is no interest in your partner and, you know, a lowered sex drive and an ability to finish. That was great. It was really great. It was a real party. So when I got to that point near the end of that journey, you know, things were really kind of off the rails. And I will tell you before, and in part three, I'll tell you what happened when I stopped taking the medication. But this is my issue. These were my issues with the medication that I took for 9 years. It took away the panic, the anxiety, the agoraphobia, and the depression. It did. It absolutely did. But it took away so much more than that. So much more than that. And I understand you can make the argument that I should have spoke up. Maybe I needed a medication. It's possible. That's true. But what I cannot stress enough is that it took away the ability to make good judgments. So while I know logically now that I should have talked to a doctor and said, this isn't right, we need to do something about this. And maybe a different medication wouldn't have had that effect. It's possible. But this particular medication sort of precluded it. It put me in a bad place and didn't allow me in a way to even act on being in that bad place. So it was a bit of an insidious cycle that I was in. So near the end of this, I will tell you what the final straw was. I was broke. Pretty much losing everything, and I mean everything, you know, relationship-wise, family, house, business, friends, everything, my health, it was bad. And what wound up happening is one night I came home from what I was calling work at the time, which was nonsense. I was doing nothing. I was not running a business. I was destroying a business and not caring and just making terrible decisions. I came home as I normally would, and I immediately picked up my laptop. This was 2005. Middle of 2005, somewhere in the neighborhood, summer. I came home and my kids were small at the time. So, you know, my daughter would have been four or five and her younger sister was 3. And they were doing what little kids do. They had already ate. So I never ate dinner with the family. I just didn't. I was absent. And I came home, didn't even talk to anybody, grabbed my laptop out of my bag and went and parked in my bedroom in the dark with my laptop open. I don't know what I was doing. Nothing. Who knows? But that's what I did. I would just hide from everybody. It was just on my own. And so the kids were in my daughter, the older daughter's room, and they were doing what little kids do. They were playing with something. And they walked out of the room, and they were going into the living room. And they did a thing that little kids do. My youngest daughter, my three-year-old, popped her head in the door of my bedroom while I was sitting there. And she said, "Daddy, come see." So she wanted me to see what they were doing. You know, little kids, they'll do stuff like that. They want to show you. They want to show you what they're doing. They want to put on a show, whatever it is. And I looked up for a second. And I said, I call her Pumpkin. I said, "Okay, Pumpkin, I'll be right there." And I put my head right back in my laptop. And she stayed there. She stayed in the doorway. And she was waiting for me. And her older sister had already gone into the living room. And she was waiting. She was waiting for the little one. And she came back, a couple seconds later. I don't know how long it was. And my youngest daughter was still standing in the doorway of the door. And she was waiting for me because I said, "Okay, Pumpkin, I'll be right there." And I put my head back in the laptop. And at the time, my oldest daughter was five. She was five. I'm not even sure when that was, to be honest with you. So my daughter was born in August. It was before that. She was almost 5 years old. And she said to her little sister, who was standing there patiently waiting for me to come, she said to her little sister, "This will, by the way," and I wrote about this, "this will stay with me until they put me in a box. This is the moment that changed everything. If my then 5-year-old daughter does not make this statement, then you are not listening to me on this podcast right now. The podcast never exists. Maybe I'm not even here. Who knows? But none of this would exist if she doesn't make the statement that she makes. So my 3-year-old is standing there waiting for me to come with her like I said I would. And the older one, 5 years old, comes up to her and says, "Come on, he's not coming. He just says that." And she takes her younger sister by the hand and they walk into the living room and left me. And it's really hard for me to even tell that, to be honest with you. It is a difficult story to relay, but it's probably the most important story that I have in my entire life. My 5-year-old and 3-year-old kind of knocked me out of my sort of Paxil coma. That's what I call it. I wasn't in a coma, just what I say. She literally told my 5-year-old was smart enough to know to tell her 3-year-old daughter, her 3-year-old sister, don't wait for him. He's not really going to come. He just says that. And you know what? She was right. She was right. She was 100% right. My 5-year-old knew that something was wrong. And she knew enough to take action. Don't wait for him. Don't bother. He's not coming. He just says that and he never comes. As a father, those of you who are dads or parents or even love other people can understand how difficult this is for me to talk about. But that was the moment. I don't know what it was about that moment. And you know, I have talked about this. I literally wrote a little paragraph, and that's in my first book, An Anxiety Story. It's in there. If you go to theanxioustruth.com, my books are there. An Anxiety Story you can download free from Smashwords, and it's a free MP3 download if you want to listen to the book. Anyway, in that book, I wrote a little something to my oldest daughter, who I call Bunny. And I told her when she was old enough, I told her that she saved me. And that is what made me decide I was done. I slammed the laptop shut after a couple of seconds. It hit me like a ton of bricks, and all the pleading and begging from other people in my life did not get through to me. That got through to me. For whatever reason, in that moment, I was ready to hear that, and I heard it, and it got through to me. She got through to me. It was a big deal. I slammed my laptop shut. I got angry. I felt an emotion. I felt angry, and I felt shame. I felt really shameful. I knew that I was letting myself and everybody else around me down. I knew that I was in that moment. I said, "This is it. Something is wrong. This is not right." Slammed the laptop shut. I grabbed my cell phone. I think it was a flip phone. It was 2005. What can I say? And I called my doctor's office. Of course, it was in the evening, so I got his voicemail. And I said, "I'm coming in." And I didn't even wait for him to call me back. I was there when they opened the doors the next day, barged in. And I said, "I got to see the doctor right now." I told them it was an emergency. I was angry. It did not leave me, right? So it stayed with me. And the next day I showed up, kind of muscled my way in, got to talk to my doctor, told him, "This is not right. I'm done with this. I can't take this medication anymore. Something is not right." And I told him what was going on. And he was concerned. He said, "Well, you know, the whole chemical imbalance thing," he was still thinking that, like, "you know, I don't know about this." I said, "I don't care if you know about it or not. I'm doing it." He said, "Okay." So here's how you're going to do it. And he gave me like, you know, weaning instructions, which were ridiculous. And again, I held no ill will against him. It was what he was being. In retrospect, he told me this is what he knew was right. This is what he was told by GlaxoSmithKline and the reps. He said, take it. We're going to drop your dose. And then you're going to start to drop your dose again. It was like a 3-week wean. And then you take it every other day and then you're off. And I did that. I did that. And that was a tremendous mistake. So in part three of this, because I'm going to wrap this up now. In part three, I'm going to talk about what my experience was when I stopped taking the medication. But that is what my experience was on the medication for a period of about 9 years and the problems it caused me and why I believe so strongly. And I'll tell you what happened after withdrawal. We'll talk about withdrawal in the next episode and then what happened after that. Why I have the stance that I have on medication, because that was my personal experience. And as you will learn in the next episode, the experience of many, 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 many other people. So that's why I feel the way I feel. And that's what got me to stop taking Paxil. I came off it way too fast based on some not so good medical advice, but it was the best advice he had at the time. And then the wheels fell off. So there you go. Thanks for hanging in there with me for 26 minutes as we do this. I appreciate it. This is a hard story for me to tell. I'm not going to lie, but I'm happy to tell it because I'm hopefully it will help some people and answer some questions. Let me just say, I cannot tell you that my experience is yours or will be yours. And as you listen to my withdrawal story in the next episode, that was my experience. It was the experience of others too, but then some people don't have that experience. So mine is not predictive of yours. It was just mine and people want to know about it. And I feel like I would be disingenuous if I didn't ultimately tell it. So here I am. So there you go. Come back next week. We'll do episode 147, which will be part three of this. We'll wrap it up. If you're listening on iTunes or any place where you can rate or review the podcast, take a second and leave a rating, 5 stars if you so inclined. And if you have a few more seconds, maybe write a review of the podcast. And if you have not checked out my book, The Anxious Truth, A Step-by-Step Guide to Overcoming Panic, Anxiety, and Agoraphobia, can't remember the title of my own damn book, go to theanxioustruth.com. The books are all there. Check it out. All the podcasts, all the links to all the social media stuff. Check it out. Anyway, here's Afterglow, as usual, by my friend Ben Drake. Love you, Ben. You can find Ben at facebook.com/BenDrakeMusic. So check him out. And I will see you guys next week. Remember, this is the way. No looking back or dwelling on the past. You know you'll never get another chance. So go and live.